And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, not just any motorcycle road racing podcast, the one that people of taste and discrimination and sophistication listen to. Tell your friends, but don't tell them too much because you want to be able to beat them when it comes to arguments.
If too many people listen, will they all be able to hear?
You know what, Ed? If a tree falls in the forest...
If I'm not there to hear it, not a sound.
If a co-ed gives a college professor a blowjob and nobody videotapes it, does he still have to give her a better grade?
That's number 32.
Number 32. He's Ed Sorbo. How long did we get into this before we got the word blowjob out? He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. It is the French suspension...
Be nice. He's picking on his friend.
Oh, I love Kevin. Did I tell you about Kevin and the ski lift?
Hey, le-suspension.com.
Le-suspension.com.
And you are?
I am Michael Gugis. You can find my insane rantings at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. Kevin was on a ski lift, and I was between him and this other guy. And Kevin was deeply upset because he had to rent skis that were, and I'm going to mispronounce it, Rossignol, I believe. And they're made, not only were they made in France, but they had the little tri-colored rooster at the tip of the ski, so we had to stare at them the whole time.
You know, when...
Wait, hold on. He said something about the French, and the guy next to me on the ski lift says, at least you've got a bloody ocean between you and them. All we've got is a channel. And so the whole ride up the mountain, I'm listening to these two people, and their fries stink, and their women don't shave their armpits.
You know, that's a great example, because during World War II, in the early part of the war,
right,
the French and the British were getting their asses handed to them on the continent by
right.
the Germans.
Right.
And I read a book that, you know, it's all about this time period. And they actually had arguments between British and French generals who
right.
were supposed to be coordinating their common defense,
right,
where it came down to the one general didn't show the other general the proper amount of respect.
Right.
Right? Like, the issue is our guys are getting slaughtered, people
right.
are dying,
and
but
they...
we're not. These two guys aren't going to talk to each other because of a type of salute or a handshake or a
right.
who said, you know. And I get it that these guys came up during a time when formalities were critically important and all that stuff. And in peace, that's all you got to go by. But,
right.
dude, you guys had a job and you failed
yeah,
to do
yeah,
your
yeah,
job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
all right.
Did you know that Hickory Farms was established in 1951?
I just want you to stop staring at my nipples.
You know, I wasn't, but I appreciate now I'm going to be like just... That's just wrong.
I can't, especially because we're
so
about
to
eat.
So do you know why I know that Hickory Farms was established in 1951?
I do know, Ed.
Yes.
Yes.
So we got a box in the mail.
Woo-hoo!
Somebody finally
we are
stepped
big
up.
Big time, yo.
Now, we don't know who it was. The you know, the shipping box doesn't have any information on it, right?
Because right.
it just got, you know, shipped from the shipping manager at Hickory Farms.
Did we mention this is number 32?
I think I did.
Okay, so
yes.
just so we actually saved the unveiling of the Hickory
yeah,
Farms box.
I've just opened the shipping box.
Exactly.
And
we're saving it for
the
you
lid.
Guys. We're doing
there's
it
a,
live.
There's a picture of a little farm, a barn
silo.
And a silo, and
right.
it says Hickory Farms. And so I think I know who sent this. It's one of our listeners. And I know this because of a Facebook post that he made.
Okay.
Okay.
Watch, it's not going to be one of our listeners.
So I don't,
it's some random
I don't think that it's the folks at Hickory Farms with a nice note in here that says how much they love our show. All right, we're about to find out. We have a drum roll. Lids off. No note. It is a mystery.
Excellent.
It's a nice...
Oh, if it's a mystery, it's got to be from Rich Oliver.
It could be from Rich Oliver.
Right? Mystery
for
school.
For listeners who don't know how this got started, we were talking about... A couple of times we talked about what you should do for your sponsors.
Right, right.
And I use the Rich Oliver Mystery School Hickory Farms thank you box that I get every year.
Right.
As an example, because he sends Lindemann Engineering
mm-hmm.
a little thank you gift every year because we sponsor the school. And so then we just got to talking about, hey, you can send Hickory Farms, you know.
And someone finally
so we
did.
got
and
two
look
sausages.
At that. You see what that is right here? It's a tear of joy.
A tear of joy.
Oh, my God.
So we got two sausages. We got two cheeses. We got crackers. And we got two kinds of mustard. And it's a little box. It's, I don't know, a foot by 8 inches. Very nice. Thank you to whoever sent it to us. But you didn't even leave a note that says,
You have to guess. It's better that it's a mystery. You want to eat some while we do this?
We're gonna chew and talk at the same time.
And we're gonna use a box cutter from the top of my toolbox to cut this stuff up.
I have to say that I do not recommend using unsterilized instruments for eating, folks.
It's from the toolbox. It's got to be good.
Michael's trying. So do you want beef summer sausage or beef summer sausage? I think we'll go with the beef summer sausage.
Hey, you know what, Ed?
Mission Jack blend cheese or smoked cheddar blend?
Ooh, smoked cheddar blend.
Yeah, that's why we're going to eat the mission first, because you got to save the, you got to, right? The one you like.
You build up to it.
Exactly.
You build up to it.
It's like, life is like a box of chocolates.
Oh, dear God.
You have to eat.
I have a knife within arm's reach.
You call that a knife? You have to. What would we call that?
What do you call it?
Easter bunny. Easter egg.
An Easter egg.
You call that a knife? Easter egg.
Really? That's an Easter egg?
Crocodile Dundee. You call that a knife?
I don't remember. This is a knife.
Oh,
pulls out.
Come on.
I'm so sorry. I've forgotten my Crocodile Dundee mythology.
You're the right age. You watched that movie. I know you did.
Oh,
boy, that series was another classic example of the first movie's good.
Right.
And then afterwards, it's just a disaster.
Right.
The other ones were so bad, they're just making the first movie worse.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think it really jumped the shark when it got to, what was the one, Crocodile Dundee Breaking Training? And there's another Easter egg for you. What was I going to say? Now that we have successfully managed to get Hickory Farms from one of our listeners, you know what I want
Don't
next?
Get greedy.
Aprilias. What?
Speaking of Aprilias.
What about him?
I've been disappointed in Marco Melandri.
Why?
Well, he's clearly not trying very hard. 2 seconds a lap slower than the next guy. Last every single time. I'm like, come on, dude. I mean, I get it. If you're smart enough to know the bike is pointless, and then why take risks and all. Meanwhile, his teammate...
they can tell...
What's his teammate's name?
Is it Bautista?
I think so. So anyway...
Let's go with Bautista.
At the end of the first lap at the Austin GP...
Right.
Two guys crash into the gravel trap.
Right.
And when it happens, you don't get to really see it.
Right.
But when they go to the replay, you'll see that Bautista is like the guy who got in trouble first, and then the chain reaction took out the other two guys.
Okay.
So maybe there is something to be said for not trying too hard when the thing is kind of hopeless.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So I'm cutting Melandri a little more slack now.
You know what? Here's
what were we going to talk about?
We were going to talk about the race, right? Yeah, the MotoGP race.
Yes. But it was another great race.
Absolutely. I'm going to give Marco some slack because he is, as best I can tell, continuing to cash his paychecks. And he's a professional road racer, right? It's a job.
Well, that's the difficult balancing act of this stuff, right?
Right.
You know, you got a competitive bike and it's working pretty damn well. And, you know, and you got a chance for the win, then trying really hard. Totally makes sense.
But throwing into the weeds for 21st?
When you know you can try your ass off and you're going to get spanked by the factory support,
sea level bikes.
Yeah, it's like, right?
Ow. Okay, got it. Okay, so let's talk about Assen. Did you bring your Valentino Rossi 46 knee pads, like the rest of the world seems to be wearing about this point in the game?
You know,
Jesus
Christ. Nobody picked him to win the championship.
He's not going to win the championship.
And
Marquez is still going to win the championship. I'm absolutely convinced of it, dude.
Oh, yeah, and Marquez is absolutely convinced that he had the inside line and that Rossi should have stopped and waved him ahead of him at the finish.
He had the inside line. Didn't have to stop. You didn't have to hit him.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
So... nobody picked Rossi to win the championship. And, you know, you could argue that extenuating circumstances when he got into the lead, right? One of those extenuating circumstances, though, was making the right decision on the airplane on the way to Argentina to commit to that difficult tire and yada yada, right? And so this event where he dominates practice. Hey, by the way, I just said Rossi dominated practice.
I know.
The last time anybody said that. And then, did you notice how he didn't qualify?
Yeah,
kind of okay,
Yeah. Lap record.
New track record, right? And so he realized he needed to fix that. And then he freaking fixed it.
Well, let's see what happens next race.
Well, you know what? You can say that all the time, right?
No. Allison.
But so my point is now, you got to look at Rossi like, oh, yeah, that guy could win the championship.
Nah, not really. Allison is a – it's like –
I love you, man.
I know.
Your boy has a 64-point deficit, right?
I am committed.
64
points. Or I need to be committed. No,
Rossi has to get zero three times.
Okay, hold on. Let's go back. Marquez has won every MotoGP race at Austin, okay? At COTA.
Yeah.
So if you go into a season and Marquez wins at Austin, you can't go, well, look, he's really fast. It's like, well, he's always fast there.
Yeah.
That's my point. That's my only point. Not to take anything away from the speed.
Right,
except that he's got at Acid.
I agree.
Amazing.
If we were just looking at the results of Rossi at Acid, you'd go, well, yeah, duh.
Mm-hmm.
Except if you watched the 2006 race, he was like last.
Yeah.
At Acid.
What happened?
I don't know.
Induction?
No, he was qualified.
What happened in the quarter? All right.
Hey, no talking with your mouth full. We're making a podcast.
Well, put film on my
you
nipple.
Could have taken a bite. He took like an inch of cheese and a big cracker, and I thought, oh, he's going to crack the cracker in half. Or he just stuffed the whole thing in his mouth.
My point is that
he's like got two jaws. He's like a snake. He's going to go sit in the sun now to warm up so he can digest.
Man, I am totally envious of reptiles.
Ah, man, laying on a rock. Long time ago, don't do drugs. Long time ago, Joshua Tree, laying on a rock in the middle of the desert, frying out of my brain on LSD. That was a transcendental experience, Ed.
Okay, so Rossi,
right, did really well. Fixed the qualifying problem. The bike had race pace. Should have walked away with the race. You know, did really good.
The only guy more impressive than Rossi is Marquez and Honda.
Coming, you mean putting
first?
Go ahead.
They went back to the old frame,
right?
Publicly,
right?
Right.
New old swing
school,
arm.
Old school. New swing arm. Old, yeah.
Right.
Old school Honda would have said it's an updated frame. Right? Honda has learned that, you know what? You can do all the engineering studies you want, and you can prove that this other thing is better. But if you've got a guy who likes this other thing,
right,
then that's what you got to use.
The John Ulrich saying, if the rider wants pink grips, give him pink grips.
Yeah, well, John's not the only guy who says that. Actually, the guy who said that most famously would be Burgess.
Who?
And so just because Rossi's done with the guy doesn't mean the guy is done.
Wait, what do you mean?
Jeremy Burgess.
Oh, right.
He's saying who because Rossi threw him over the fence.
No. I didn't catch who it was for a moment there. I was too busy. I'm
trying to cut your thumb off.
Oh, this is great. Oh, my God. Hey, whoever sent this, please send more.
So check this out. It's really sad that there are people with mental problems.
Right.
And one of the saddest is the condition that causes you to deny the moon landings.
Okay.
Right? You know, conspiracy theory people. And that actually is a mental problem. There are people that have that problem.
Right?
I'm actually liking this Hickory Farms for a reason I didn't expect, is that it keeps Michael quiet.
No, it doesn't. It just keeps me unintelligible.
Yeah. So, one of the things that, you know, is crazy about the moon conspiracy,
right,
besides the fact that you can take a picture of the moon lander on the moon from Earth now. You can see it.
No, dude.
Okay.
The whole moon is a conspiracy.
Yeah. Is that if it were a conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
thousands of people would have to keep their mouth shut for all this time.
Right.
And that's not possible.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that Honda went, no, we're just going to tell everybody it's the frame. Because, sure, the members of the team won't say anything this season.
Right.
They got contracts, yada, yada, yada. But mm-hmm. somebody would figure it out. And then you would look bad. You would look like you were bullshitting everybody
right.
or whatever. And if you got a guy like Marquez, give him the chassis that makes him happy
mm-hmm.
and let him go. So they learned something really useful from that chassis design, that lesson. And I'd be willing to bet that just like how Yamaha is using all their success to build an R1 amp,
right.
new R1, Honda will apply this engineering lesson to their street stuff, and it's good for all of us.
And they'll apply to their race bikes for the rest of the season.
But interesting, and to further go with this point, Pedroza until he had that oddball crash, was every bit as fast as Marquez.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the new chassis,
right,
with the new swing arm and the old exhaust.
But
it's neat. They were talking about, Marquez said that the old chassis gives him more room for error.
Right.
He can ride closer to the limit. He can make mistakes.
Right.
And
better
so
feel.
The word they were using was precise. The new chassis is more precise, and the old chassis, you know, has more margin for error,
right,
which perfectly matches the two rider styles.
Yeah.
Right?
Marquez is sideways because he grew up on Moto 2
yep.
bikes, which...
because he's crazy.
Well, no. If you see...
I think that his amount of sideways is in his DNA, dude. It's
what?
Not just because he spent a season...
No, I think it was two seasons. And have you seen those guys back those bikes in? Holy crap.
Yeah, that's all well and fine, but
right?
He has more sideways than two seasons of sideways.
Whereas Pedrosa grew up on 250s, and you had to keep him in line.
Yeah.
As you well
so
know.
So, what happened to Lorenzo?
Lorenzo, I think he might be the success story of the weekend. Because his
that
qualifying sucked, his practice sucked, and he managed to pull off a third.
And here's the reason that you didn't know about.
What?
It's a different rear tire.
Uh-huh.
Because... Assen is so hard on tires.
Mm-hmm.
Bridgestone brought a tire more like last year's tire, harder on the edge.
Okay.
So he has less feel at maximum lean angle, and it reverted him to...
Which is Lorenzo's strength.
And when you take that tire away from him, you got a really sad Lorenzo.
Right.
And you could see it from the first session.
Lorenzo.
Yep. And at the end of the morning warm-up, everybody was practicing flag-to-flag bike swaps.
Right.
And when he came in to do that swap, there was a blue-shirted Yamaha crew member standing before the bikes, and Lorenzo had to go on the other side of the guy, and then he didn't get to park in the exact spot, and
right.
So then he didn't even really try the jump to their bike, and he was gesturing at the guy for being in the wrong place. And it's a classic example of Lorenzo's frustrated and unhappy, and... Okay, so he was in bad situation.
Right.
And he qualified in Rossi's spot. How crazy was that?
Right.
But he went to third on the first lap,
mm-hmm.
and then he got third place points, and
yep.
he didn't crash, and he didn't fuck up, and he
nope.
didn't melt himself down, and I think that was a big success for him.
I agree. It was that whole, okay, I know what I can accomplish today.
112 consecutive laps. That record's going to stand for a long time.
That's really amazing.
It is.
Hey, speaking of Lorenzo, just for a second, you had a really interesting idea, a really interesting observation on why you thought Lorenzo was doing better this year. And it had to do with something that you saw in the garage very early in the season.
Yeah.
It was different than last year. Ah, the light bulb comes on, Ed's eyes get big.
At the beginning of the season, he had extra entourage.
Right.
And then he got rid of that extra entourage at the next round. And now he's got the same one guy in the stonewashed jeans, and you know the guy is on it. I think that is definitely part of the problem. That he had the wrong crew. You know, Rossi's a perfect example. How do you say that Rossi's friend's name? Udo?
Udo, I don't know.
Right, that same guy all the
right?
time.
Exactly.
You know, and somebody on the Wira board made a point that what that guy was doing was keeping Rossi down to reality. Like, it's that guy's job to go, yeah, you're Rossi, dude, but you still are just a guy.
Right.
I knew you when you were running home crying to mom about whatever, right?
Right, right.
Because that is a real problem. Like, Donald Trump has that problem.
Oh, dude.
Right? He's surrounded by people that tells him he's great. He's paying them, so now he's running for president. He's a freaking idiot.
Michael Jackson was the
yeah.
best example
oh, yeah.
of that.
Well,
by the time,
poor.
If you've never heard the word no after the time you were eight,
yeah.
that's
yeah,
how you grow
late.
Up.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just like, you want anything you want. Yeah, sure. So, yeah, it has to do with that environment that's around you and minimizing the change outside of your actual racing. The, you know, the Keith Coad argument about you have a dollar's worth of attention. When you got seven people in your entourage, that's seven people who potentially can change things on you. So,
what about two bikes?
What about them?
So, we've talked about this a few times, and I think people are surprised to hear me say how difficult it is to have two bikes at a race.
What?
In fact, I even had some person who's not qualified tell me on a Facebook post, wouldn't you want to have two bikes? You know, like, so I traveled around the country for 6 years with one bike the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, really easy to think about the logistical difficulty of having two bikes, twice as much shit in your trailer, right? And this was an issue for Americans last year because they had the no spare bike rule.
Right,
in DMG, and people were making a big thing about it, right?
Right.
But the big teams wanted it because if you have two bikes, that means you actually have to have three for them to maintain, because you've got to have the two bikes and you have to have enough parts for spare.
I'm not sure I buy the premise of this, but
that was their point, and it was going to be a saving for them. Anyway, my point is simply that two bikes is way more difficult than you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And my proof is Pedroza crashes on his A-bike in a weird crash in the morning warm-up. And the bike gets destroyed, it cartwheels.
Okay.
So he has to go to the B bike.
Right.
And these is arguably, there are two best motorcycle teams in the world.
Right.
Right? There's the Yamaha guys and there's the Honda guys.
Right.
Right? And they have staff. They got so many staff, I can't even count all the crew members in the time the camera's in the garage. Right? And that doesn't even include the guys that are in the back that you can't even see.
Right.
Okay? And so Pedroza goes to the start of the race on his B bike.
Right.
And it has a clutch problem on the start. And it has a brake problem in the race.
Okay.
He said it felt like there was air in the brakes, and he had no brakes, and it took a long time for the problem to go away. And in fact, whatever his problems were, they continued to the very end of the race, because he was in like fifth or something.
So what's your
and
point?
And two laps from the end, he ends up ninth or whatever.
So what's your point?
And the problem is, if those guys can't have two bikes that are exactly the same
mm-hmm.
and ready, even when they had the time from after the warm-up lap to the start of the race to finish the bike up,
mm-hmm.
that regular folks shouldn't even try. You just can't do it. You're better off.
I disagree.
Repairing your broken bike.
I'm ready to argue. I prefer to argue with you.
That's too bad. I've already checked this off.
Here's why. Those bikes are so insanely complicated. You can't possibly keep them. It's much more difficult to keep two of them in perfect, in fully operating condition. Whereas, and that's why Formula One teams, they take three cars to an event. They have a backup car.
I just pointed out that three bikes was too much for the big teams and they wanted to save money.
No.
You told me that didn't count.
Because,
and then you say the Formula Car teams being three cars.
Because
it's the
same
reason.
No, because they're insanely complicated. But if you're racing super stock or racing, quite frankly, most national level superbike at this point in the
Michael,
game.
Michael, you can't even remember to bring all your stuff to the racetrack. What did you forget at the last race?
No, it's what I forgot to take home.
No, there was something prior to that you forgot to take to the track and you had to borrow it from me at the track.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so how are you going to do two bikes?
Me personally. But if I'm a superbike, a national superbike rider, I'm not doing that shit myself.
I'm not talking to superbike national teams.
Well, who are you talking about?
Regular folks who are trying to bring a spare bike to their club race
because
they think they're supposed to because it's cool and whatever.
No,
that's
the wrong reason to do it. But if you are in
is us in agreement. That's as close as it gets, folks.
But if you are in, what are you looking at?
The time is 23 already.
Why did you not?
I forgot to start it.
Oh, great.
No, it can't be 23 minutes.
Yes, it is. This is 15, and I started at 5 minutes late.
Okay,
so
are you sure?
So it's time for the 2-minute board.
Okay.
You said you had...
Right. My mom died this week, and...
And we're sorry to hear that.
Thank you, Ed. But I had a great motorcycling story to tell you about it. My mom did not like motorcycles at all. But to her credit, when she understood how important they were to me, she quit complaining. She would actually occasionally listen to one of my racing stories, okay, which is like that was really cool. So anyway, no surprise. We know the end is coming. We're making arrangements for everything. My mom wants to be cremated, and we're discussing. Okay, do you want the ashes mailed to you, shipped to you, or do you want to come pick them up? And I'm like, well, how much is it? She's like, it's $95. I'm like, well, we are, you know, our family is thrifty. We put the thrifty in thrifty. So I was like, no way we're spending $95 on shipping. So I said, I'll come pick you up. And also understand that she never liked to drive on the freeway. She was a genius at finding surface street routes for anywhere.
So you drove her on the freeway, 100 miles an hour?
No. She's never been on the bike. I told her, okay, Mom, I'm gonna come pick your ashes up, but when I come, I'm gonna come get them on the bike. And her only response was, "You're not going to take the freeway home, are you?" Totally cool. Hey,
he's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo. Aloha.